In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
And welcome to the program for Monday, May 3rd, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In this hour, we are talking about the cyber world. InfoWarCon is coming to the Washington Convention Center May 12th through 14th, only about 10 days away. And I have two gentlemen who are experts in this field to tell me about InfoWarCon, some of the subjects that will be covered, and some of the cyber challenges that we're facing in the defense space today. I'm pleased to welcome Bob Giesler, Senior VP of Cyber and Information Operations at SAIC, and the former Director of the Information Operations and Strategic Studies Office at the Secretary of Defense's office. Thank you very much for being here today, Bob. I appreciate your time. And Dr. Dan Keel, Professor of Information Operations at iCollege at the National Defense University. Professor, may I call you Dan?
Of course.
Thank you very much for being here as well. Dan, why don't you start by telling us about InfoWarCon in general and then about this year's presentation in specific.
InfoWarCon actually goes back about a decade and a half to the early to mid-1990s, and the name was a deliberate play on words from something called DEF CON, which is a well-known large hacker conference. And so Win Schwartau created InfoWarCon as kind of an effort to not gather together the hacker community, but gather together the academic, industry, and military community that dealt with what we called at the time information warfare, now referred to as information operations.
Mm-hmm. And this has been going on then for, you said, about 15 years or so. This year's program is called Future Warfare Today, the Battle for Information and Ideas. And it really points, I think, as we go through, we'll talk about some of those particular events that are going to take place at this. But as we go through and look at what you've got on the schedule, it really indicates that the information technology and the information itself that is manifested through that technology is probably the most critical element, not just today, but as we move forward, and how to leverage that is really what you're going to be focusing on.
That's correct. And one of the ways that the program has come together really structures itself in approaching information from two complementary but distinct directions. One is the technological side. That's, in effect, the cyberspace side. And the other is the human or influence side. And while the two are distinct, they are mutually complementary and synergistic. And you need one to do the other in the modern world.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bob, in addition to your responsibilities at SAIC, you are chairman of the Information Operations Committee for the Association of Old Crows. What is the Association of Old Crows?
Old Crow refers to a World War II term called the Ravens, who were electronic countermeasures officers that rode in airplanes to jam radar signals and enemy communications. Over the years, those electronic countermeasure officers retained the name Ravens until the 50s and 60s, when they just started calling themselves Old Crows. As the discipline advanced primarily in Strategic Air Command, the community decided to organize itself and established a professional trade organization now called the Association of Old Crows.
Mm-hmm.
About 5 years ago, the Old Crows decided to incorporate a new field called information operations, which includes cyber as well as electronic warfare, as well as the cognitive sciences of deception and psychological operations. So we consider ourselves a single trade organization focusing on that entire spectrum of activities within the defense sphere.
Who am I going to see if I come to this event, in addition to who you have on the docket? Who attends an event like this?
I think you'll probably see about three quarters of the audience will be active duty military, both foreign and domestic. We have probably 6 to 7 countries that actively participate in the Old Crows.
Mm-hmm.
You will also see federal civilians involved in information operations or media relations, such as public affairs. And you also see a large portion of representation from industry as well.
The representatives from other countries, are they finding the same cyber challenges when it comes to military operations that we are? Or could that vary from country to country for particular reasons?
No, I think you'll find a very strong commonality of understanding of cyber problems. It is a global commons. Everybody is on the internet. Everybody has the same technology. Everybody is seeing the same thing as we are. So diplomatically and from a law enforcement perspective, you'll see a huge amount of agreement internationally with with our perspective.
All right. Here's what I'd like to do, gentlemen. I've got a copy of the program for this, and I'd like to just go through, and I've pulled out some topics of discussion that you're going to cover at this event, and that I think are really widely applicable, not just to the defense world, but to the federal government world in general. One of the speakers you're going to have the first day, next Wednesday, is Price Floyd, the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense. And he's been on our program a number of times. He's been on Federal News Radio talking about some of these issues. But one of the things here that I think is pretty interesting is this concept that one-way communication is not dead, but we need to be ready to adapt and change how we engage with audiences. I think most people who think about the way that people engage now, or the way that they want to engage, would say that maybe it's possible one-way communication is dead. People want to be able to respond. If they go on a newspaper website or on Federal News Radio, they want to be able to comment at the end, even if it's just to say, you stink, or whatever it is. That two-way interaction, I mean, what do you think? One-way communication dead or not dead?
A few years ago, the DoD attempted to define a term we use, strategic communication, in terms of transmitting themes and messages, which I thought was disastrous. The current way of looking at it is much better, because it starts with understanding and engaging. That gets at that issue of it has to be a two-way or a multi-dimensional conversation, directional conversation, that's going on between all the different parties or parts of the communication. Mm-hmm. And so one way, that's fine if what you want to do is deliver an office memo, but it really has to be more than that.
Mm-hmm. I imagine that Mr. Floyd was involved, Bob, in the recent decision to lift the not ban exactly, but the pretty considerable restrictions on things like blogging and using social media tools and stuff like that in the military. There were a lot of people who thought that this was done just because the Pentagon had decided we can't really control it anymore, so we're not going to pretend that we're going to try. You may or may not agree with that, but it would seem to me that that was kind of an admission, in part at least, that one-way communication and the idea that we can control this message or whatever information we want to put out there maybe isn't realistic anymore.
I think it's more a matter of less of control and more a matter of understanding that getting feedback, not only of what you say but of what you do, is absolutely critical in any communications model. So if you – and we also recognize, I think, both in industry and the government, that your best spokesman are your entire organization, not just a single public affairs officer that's speaking for the entire institution. Some of the most compelling messages, I think, coming out of – Iraq and Afghanistan are from younger enlisted soldiers who do get onto social media and tell the world what it's really like over there.
Mm-hmm. It has been frustrating for some people inside the Pentagon who've told me off the record, we're doing cool things. We're doing a lot more good things than bad things are happening, but the bad things seem to get spoken about the most. And there did seem to be a lot of frustration about how do we get the good stories out there, and that seemed to be a good...
Well, this is one of the ways where the social media are changing the dynamics of the conversation, in that the social media, the Twitter, Facebook, and all the other stuff, enables Joe Bag of Donuts out in the front line to gather information on something and disseminate it rapidly, widely, and then it can get picked up and go virally. And by the blink of an eye, it's gone from one individual to 10 to 50,000 and on from there, including to the national media.
Mm-hmm. The point ultimately is to get information not to the media, not to organizations like Federal News Radio necessarily, although it's nice for us to have information, but ultimately to the citizens who are to understand what the government is doing with their money, with their taxpayer dollars, ultimately, it seems to me.
What it really goes back to, if you go back 20 years to the national security strategies of the Reagan administration, or 10 years to the work of the Hart-Rudman Commission, the United States Commission on National Security Strategy in the 21st Century, 1999 and 2000, where both of those efforts said, we may need to disseminate the means of communication to other audiences elsewhere in the world, mm-hmm. so that we can then get what we want to them and engage in this conversation. That's what this technology enables.
Mm-hmm. All right. My guests are Bob Giesler of SAIC and Dan Keel of the National Defense University. We're talking about InfoWarCon, which is coming up next week at the Washington Convention Center, and talking about some of the implications of cyber challenges for the military and other government agencies. Our conversation will continue in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Make your dollar go further at Nationals Park. Hit your writ on and watch future Hall of Famer Pudge Rodriguez, All-Star Ryan Zimmerman, slugger Adam Dunn, and the Nats battle the Braves Tuesday, May 4th through Thursday the 6th. T-shirt Tuesday. Be one of the first 10,000 fans. You'll get a free Nats Town T-shirt presented by the Potomac Nationals. Miller Lite Party Night Thursday with $5 Miller products at the Miller Lite Scoreboard Walk. Spend less, get more. Go Nats. Visit Nationals.com or call 888-632-NATS.
The case involves stealing more than $300,000 from banks and brokerage firms. Special Agent Mike Petronella at the FBI's New York office says there was a money mule.
Money was wired into the personal account, and then it would be withdrawn by the money mule in cash, basically give it to our gentleman that we ended up arresting, and then that gentleman would use Western Union to actually send the money overseas.
Petronella says the money mule played a key role.
The individual that we're discussing here, he was a recruiter, a mid-level money mule recruiter, so he would be in contact with the guy in a foreign country. He would find then people here in the United States who could take the money into their own bank accounts.
Hacking into victim banks and brokers was done from overseas. One guy on the inside became a source for the FBI.
We approached him to interview him on his activity, and he basically said, yeah, I'm involved in this. I know it's bad. I'm willing to help you out any way I can.
One subject who hacked and moved money around admitted guilt and was sentenced to prison for 3 years and a month. I'm Neil Schiff of the FBI on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm Christopher Dorbeck. Here's what we're working on for this afternoon's Daily Debrief. How is your website doing meeting the needs of citizens? The latest quarterly assessment, it's just out, and some agencies doing pretty well. We'll hear about it. And it's the first Monday of the month. How did your thrift savings plan do in April? We'll have our regular update from Tom Trabuco from the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabek and Amy Morris, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We are talking about cyber challenges that the Defense Department and other government agencies face, and that will be the topic of, or just one of the topics of discussion at InfoWarCon. Future Warfare Today, the Battle for Information and Ideas, next week at the Washington Convention Center. My guests in studio, Bob Giesler of SAIC and Dan Keel of the National Defense University. What's the website for InfoWarCon for somebody that wants to learn more about it or sign up for it? We can get that linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
InfoWarCon.com.
That's pretty simple.
Yeah, pretty
simple. You made it easy so that even I can figure that one out. All right, terrific. We'll get that linked up. We were talking before about the control of ideas a lot of agencies are having a hard time getting used to the idea that we can't necessarily put all the information on a pile and hand it out the way we want to hand it out, as has been in the past. You were talking, Bob, about the idea of feedback and the desirability of feedback from private citizens, from other governments, and from any number of different sources. Is there even a reasonable expectation that agencies can control the message or the information that they want out there anymore? Or is it better for people to assume that everything that we have, unless it's classified and is being held in that manner, is it better to assume that other than that, it's going to be out there or could be out there in some form?
Well, I think it's interesting to look at the evolution of media relations in the Department of Defense since Vietnam. The military took the lesson that media was responsible for our perceived loss strategically. The result of that was the military effectively keeping the media away from the battlefield during Desert Shield, Desert Storm. And then we flipped completely 10 years later in Iraqi Freedom, where the feeling in the Pentagon was if we embed media up front, that the true story will actually sell the story. And I think that was a rousing success based on most of the feedback. Any mature communications model has to be able to accommodate for feedback. I can't tell you how many times when I was still in the department, my foreign counterpart said, "You Americans speak, but you never listen." So we have traditionally been very good at broadcasting our message, but never listening for what comes back at us.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes actions as well as words.
Dan, what's the key to getting people to understand that the listening part and the receiving communications interaction from other people instead of just dishing it out?
Well, this relates to a mantra that my students have heard over and over and over again, which is the realization that what you say may not be what the audience hears. The meaning that an image conveys to you may not convey the same meaning to another audience. And so looking at information and looking at events through other than your own eyes and ears is absolutely crucial to being successful in terms of interacting with, engaging, and hopefully over the long run influencing foreign audiences more towards what we're trying to drive towards.
That's been especially problematic at times given the cultures that we're interacting with, where we are in the Middle East and South Asia, where they have a totally different view of the world, every element that you think of, governmentally, socially, faith-based, everything is completely different.
It's somewhat of a throwaway line, but we don't understand ourselves very well.
Mm-hmm.
If that's true, then how can we hope to effectively understand other cultures and audiences? We're trying to, though. The military is making some very vigorous and active efforts over the last half decade or so. In Iraq and especially in Afghanistan, of trying to understand better the social milieu in which our operations and forces are operating, the human terrain teams, things like that. And by doing so, understanding that when we do something, what is that message will that convey to an audience? And another point that I stress to my students is, the clearest form of a message is an action, is a deed. But don't ever forget that something that you don't do is also an action. And the example I always use is two villages. We build a well for one, and we run out of money, and we don't build a well for the other village.
Mm-hmm.
We've just sent a message to that second village. We don't care about you.
Yeah.
Even though that's not the message we want to send.
Right. That's not how it was intended, but that's what they understood. You'd like those guys better because you went there
first.
That's
correct.
Yeah. That bumps up right against, though, the issue of resources and deploying the resources and the planning and so on. Is that something that is being dealt with, do you think, effectively?
We're trying to. If you look back at the efforts that General Petraeus made, first of all in northern Iraq and then throughout Iraq, and now he and General McChrystal in Afghanistan, they're trying to leverage resources to get every last bit of positive influence out of them. I'm trying to remember the exact quote from General Petraeus. He says something like, a dollar is actually ammunition. He's exactly right. In a struggle for positive influence in a society, the resources that you are able to use engaging and aiding that society can have enormous payback well beyond just the initial expenditures.
All right. I want to shift gears here a little bit and talk about something that is pretty much in this city, at least, ubiquitous. We all have multimedia devices in our pockets. They used to be called cell phones, and now they have any... Yours is not doing so well today, though, Dan, as you were telling us before we went on the air.
Well, when you fall on it, walking the dogs and break it, it doesn't work so well.
Yeah, that's problematic. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk about some of the implications for everyone walking around with a video camera and a communications device and the Internet all in their pockets and what that might mean, and we'll talk about that when we continue our conversation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose. We'll be back in a moment.
NBC News Radio, I'm Luke Russert. As the head of an oil giant, BP says his company will clean up the oily mess in the Gulf of Mexico, the mess continues to grow. The Coast Guard reports that it could take 90 days to drill a relief well, and NBC's Mark Potter says even temporary solutions are ways off.
It'll be a week away before they can put that hood over the oil and suck some of that up into a ship above and reduce the amount going into the Gulf. Other than that, there's really no big fix.
Iran's president is rejecting allegations his country is developing nuclear weapons. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad spoke at the start of a United Nations conference reviewing the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg says police are scrutinizing video from dozens of cameras in their investigation of the weekend's attempted car bombing in Times Square. Bloomberg called the attempted bombing a sick and despicable act and said New Yorkers would not be scared by it. And actress Lynn Redgrave has died of breast cancer at the age of 67. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Luke Russert, NBC News Radio.
This Mother's Day, give your mother the gift that will last as long as a mother's love. Have a star named after her. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, we will send your mom a beautiful personalized gift package with her chosen star. You may also include a sterling silver bracelet and heart charm with your mother's name and star location engraved on it. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com so she'll have her gift for Mother's Day.
Meet Eloy Flores, owner of a new Buick LaCrosse CXS.
I had a Lexus IS, but bottom line is they didn't have the standard options for what came standard with the LaCrosse CXS. Great interior, the heads-up display, the touchscreen navigation. There's something to be said about a vehicle that turns heads. If Buick keeps up with what they're doing, there won't be any need to go somewhere else. This is an incredible car.
To hear more of Eloy's story and to learn more about LaCrosse, visit Buick.com and may the best car win.
Checking your daily TSP ticker. The latest numbers from April 30th, 2010. The G Fund is unchanged at $13.26. The F Fund rises 0.04 at $13.72. The C Fund drops 0.24 at $14.15. The S Fund loses 0.44 at $18.96. And the I Fund loses 0.07 at $18.25. Your L Funds all drop. The 2040 down 0.19 at $16.48. The 2030 loses 0.16 at $16.21. The 2020 down 0.13 at $15.94. The 2010 falls 0.05 at $15.57. The L Income loses 0.03 at $14.19. Check your rates anytime, every day on federalnewsradio.com. Dimitri Sotis, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's to you, doctors. After all, yours is the very first face all of us see. You're who all of our mothers hope we'll someday grow up to be. It's you who we run to with a sniffle, a fever, or the odd case of mesenteric lymphadenitis. You fix our broken bones. You mend our broken hearts. You help us with everything from our allergies to, well, our zits. And though it may seem we sometimes don't appreciate all that you endure to keep us well, the endless years of schooling, the 14-hour shifts, the vending machine coffee, or actually having to read medical journals, we do appreciate you. Because when we're feeling our worst, we can count on you to give us your best. You're our healers. You're our heroes. You're our doctors. So from all of us to all of you, thanks. Kaiser Permanente. May you live long and thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. Meeting Mission Goals Through Technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Secretary of Commerce Gary Locke has announced that 9 American Recovery Act investments will go to help bridge the technological divide in the U.S. and boost economic growth, meeting several goals of that department. Over $114 million will be awarded to increase broadband access and adoption in over a dozen states. The grants will fund projects that lay the groundwork to bring enhanced high-speed internet access to thousands of households and businesses, and link hundreds of schools, hospitals, libraries, and public safety offices through the Internet. All told, the Department of Commerce has awarded 82 broadband technology opportunities program grants worth a total of $1.2 billion to expand broadband access through projects in a majority of states and territories.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
EADS North America, a leader in all sectors of defense and homeland security. Today, EADS North America is delivering the U.S. Army and National Guard's UH-72A Lakota light utility helicopters on schedule and on budget. Built in Mississippi, the Lakota helicopter is just one example of EADS's commitment to the U.S. economy. Contributing $11 billion to the U.S. economy each year, EADS supports 200,000 American jobs. EADS North America, answering America's call.
Here's Charlie Weiscarver, Deputy CIO, Department of State, on the Federal Executive Forum on Virtualization and Data Center Management Strategies, sponsored by Riverbed.
You know, the real advantage of what we have here is that these data centers and this consolidation effort that we have underway, it's given the CIO much better understanding of its inventory out there. We have visibility now, and someone had mentioned this earlier, is the visibility into all the assets out there. So I think it's going to make the federal government and industry as a whole much more leaner.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
How do you consolidate IT without compromising performance? Make it happen with Riverbed. With our WAN optimization solutions, you can virtualize your government data center with ease. Plug and play in as little as 15 minutes. Cut IT costs up to 30%. Accelerate agency applications up to 100 times. And keep data safe and secure. Learn more and download a free white paper at riverbed.com/virtualization. Riverbed. Think fast.
Isn't it time for a government technology event that gives you 21st century IT solutions? Join us at Gov 2.0 Expo, May 25th through May 27th at the Washington Convention Center for 3 days of incisive keynote speakers, in-depth training sessions, and networking with the brightest minds in the government IT sector. Gov 2.0 Expo, the training event for the future of government computing. Expo hall passes are free for all government employees. Register today at gov2expo.com.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're talking about securing your information, and InfoWarCon is also covering a variety of topics along those lines. It is coming next week to the Washington Convention Center, and you can learn more about it at InfoWarCon.com, and we'll have that linked up for you at FederalNewsRadio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. My guest to talk about InfoWarCon and some of the topics that will be taken up there next week, Dr. Dan Keel, Professor of Information Operations at iCollege, part of the National Defense University, and Bob Giesler, Senior Vice President for Cyber and Information Operations at SAIC and formerly inside the Office of the Secretary of Defense. One of the people you have on the agenda next week is Mr. Wynn Schwartau. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. He's going to be talking about something that I find fascinating, and that is the idea of smartphones and the fact that there are 80 kajillion of them. Everybody in walking around just about has one or has a mobile device that has some of the capabilities of a smartphone. It was one of the things, as I mentioned to you both off the air, that made me want to slap my head when the whole Tiger Woods thing broke, which is here's the idea of one of the 10 or 15 most famous people in the world seemingly oblivious to the idea that at any place that he is, at any given time, if there's more than two people there, one of them could take a picture of him doing whatever he was doing. I find that whole thing ridiculous. At any rate, the implication there for the military is that the same thing applies to people in the field or the people that people in the field are interacting with. being able to observe what's happening, being able to observe what is what operations are being conducted, or potentially trying to hack their way onto networks using any of a myriad of devices. One of the things that's written in the blurb for this presentation in the program, the smartphone is highly mobile, prolific, and a huge risk to military and government operations. Bad actors attack infrastructures using multiple vectors. The smartphone is the next target. We're already seeing it in that when government officials went to China for the Olympics last year, they were told, don't take your regular equipment. Take only disposable equipment. Assume that it will be hacked. Assume that it will be that somebody will try to steal it and throw it away as soon as you're done with it. Make sure it's destroyed. What are the implications for the ubiquity of smartphones? This says that by 2014, there are an estimated 4.1 billion mobile endpoints, meaning people walking around with these devices, to either get on or be on networks, both in the military and in the civilian agencies. What are we looking at here as a way? Can these be controlled? Can they be nailed down? Or is this a situation where we're going to have to just worry about nailing down the information that goes to them?
Well, I think you'll see within the next 5 years people using mobile computing devices far more than desktops. In the Far East, more than 85% of Google searches are now conducted by mobile phones as opposed to somebody behind a PC. So you'll see more and more data being pushed out because that's where people are working. And in the case of the government, that means more and more sensitive data that needs to be protected. I think you'll find that there are hardware solutions, but there are also ubiquitous exploits that can be downloaded from the internet. Some very good ones that you can buy via credit card from Thailand, for instance, that could pretty well turn your phone into a mobile listening station, and where you can listen on phone calls as they occur. So the concern for security, I think, is legitimate. I'm not sure it's going to be that critical, particularly as major providers of mobile services such as Verizon, AT&T, start to harden not only the phones that they sell, but also the data streams that they push out to those phones. You still have to be aware of that threat, though.
One of the things about this, though, is that as the methods of providing the bandwidth get cheaper, too, there are going to be places for bad actors to go to access networks in a lot cheaper and a lot easier ways than they're able to even now.
You don't have to be sitting right next to, geographically, your target in order to affect him. The single most striking image that I saw from the recent Iceland volcano incident was the photograph of the Norwegian Prime Minister sitting in an airport somewhere here in the United States with his device, his iPad on his lap, running his country from the airport, which on the one hand was a marketing device that Apple couldn't have paid $1 billion to get. On the other hand, it raises this issue of, boy, I hope that's secure, because if he's running his country from that device, then someone else could try to unrun it.
Well, and that's the issue with mobile devices, too, as a space in the marketplace. It isn't just cell phones. Apple has just announced, I think this morning, that they've sold a million iPads already. There are six or eight Windows-based or Android-based tablets that are in development, various stages of development. Hewlett Packard's expected to have a Windows-based tablet on the market within the next couple of months. So there's going to be another kajillion. It is a whole separate space where you can take something that's the size of a legal pad or smaller. And as you said, this guy was running his country from it sitting in an airport.
I'm holding in my hand right now my government BlackBerry. Fits right in the palm. I remember seeing an advertisement from a German manufacturer about 2 years ago saying, run your SCADA system from your BlackBerry. I was terrified when I saw this because anyone in Washington, D.C. Certainly remembers what happens when a SCADA system goes wrong. SCADA stands for Supervisor Control and Data Acquisition, and that's what happened with the Metro crash last summer. Was at the SCADA controlling system, something went wrong. Well, if you can control a SCADA system from a BlackBerry, I sure hope it's secured.
And you hope that that doesn't fall into the hands of somebody who's maybe smarter than you'd like them to be. That's the other issue is a ton of these devices that are floating around are supposed to be encrypted, are supposed to have self-destruct mechanisms, and don't. And is that an issue just of how often do we refresh our inventory, or is that an issue of not enough resources, or maybe some combination thereof, making sure that these devices do what they need to do in order to keep the data that's on them secure?
I think the number one computer security problem is user behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Most cell phones that are sold today have the ability to build a user lockout so that if you don't use it after about 30 seconds, it will simply lock out and you need to punch in a code. How many people buy a phone and disable that?
Mm-hmm.
How many people then download their entire Outlook email inbox and walk around letting that be exposed if they should drop it in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm. And I think I read not too long ago that one of the taxi companies in Washington said that the thing that they find more than anything else in the back seats of cabs is lost cell phones.
Absolutely.
So these things disappear, these mobile devices disappear like crazy, like nothing you've ever seen, and God only knows what's on a bunch of these things. My guests are Bob Giesler of SAIC and Dan Keel, the National Defense University. We're talking about a lot of subjects that are going to be covered at InfoWarCon at the Washington Convention Center next week, and our conversation continues in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The SATCOM report is brought to you by Hughes, the global leader in broadband satellite networks and services. Here is Tony Bardo from Hughes.
A federal agency's greatest asset is the knowledge and expertise of its employees. But with travel and training budgets limited throughout the government, how can agencies provide cost-effective educational opportunities to a nationwide workforce? Hughes brings the classroom to the student with distance learning via satellite broadband technology. Distance learning solutions from Hughes deliver training cost-effectively where and when it is needed. Incorporating fully interactive HD video and audio technology, Hughes Distance Learning Solutions can be multicast to classrooms and employees across the country, providing the online education and training needed to sustain a world-class workforce.
Visit today's complete SATCOM report on federalnewsradio.com. Visit Hughes on the web at government.hughes.com or call 800-498-4909.
Across government, federal IT managers are contending with the OMB directive to consolidate data centers. Are you on the right path? Join leading experts from government and industry as they chart a practical roadmap to OMB compliance at the GTSI Technology Leadership Series, May 12th at the Willard Hotel in Washington, D.C. Attend and receive a free copy of their new federal IT survey on virtualization. To register, visit gtsi.com/TLS. GTSI, one mission, yours.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Jane Norris.
The Assistant Administrator in TSA's Office of Communications and Public Affairs, Kristen Lee.
There are times where someone posts a question via Twitter and our blogger Bob, as he is known, is able to get back to passengers often within a few minutes. Bob is our full-time blogger. We also have five other bloggers who help out time to time as needed, many of whom are actually officers in the field.
Hear the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/Federal Drive. Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests are Bob Giesler of SAIC and Dan Keel of the National Defense University, both involved with the InfoWarCon happening next week at the Washington Convention Center. And we're talking about some of the topics that will be covered at this three-day event next week. One of them is a talk called Exploiting Commercial Cyber Intelligence.
And they're, what the panelists and the moderator, Matthew Pushkin, will be covering in this conversation will be some of the things that are available through commercial channels that agencies can use to enhance their cybersecurity efforts. When I saw that, my question was, is it possible that agencies are spending too much time and spending too much money reinventing the wheel when it comes to cybersecurity and thinking too and working too hard on the problem and maybe not working and thinking as smartly as they could by using things that are already available and then maybe trying to build on work that's already been done? Either one of you have thoughts on that?
I'll take a shot at
it. Okay.
The whole emphasis in this conference to focus on commercially provided cyber data is to show the largely audience that there's a lot of information already available in the public domain and sold commercially for both the government as well as industry. We are at a point, I would assert, that we saw back in the late 90s where commercial imagery became available to the government. And it ultimately became so popular with government users that it became part of the government's architecture for use of that data, because you could hand it to coalition partners. You could hand it to local and state officials far more readily than you could from classified systems. I would assert we're at that point of inflection where commercial data can be part of a governmental architecture. And there are a lot of government agencies using that data now, but not in a coherent strategy that I think would we will see in a few years.
And let me add another perspective to that in terms not just of securing our governmental military data, but the information is available out there in the private sector. We did a classified course this past semester on computer network operations. And one of the pieces of that was we exposed the students to – we brought in a faculty member with no clearance – who said, let me show you what I found out there just on the internet, et cetera, of potentially useful value to the adversary and doing things to us. And the students were horrified by how much information is available on critical infrastructure, almost like electric grids, power plants, communication networks, et cetera, that they're owned by the private sector, so they're not classified information, mm-hmm. and they need to be able to share that stuff for business purposes. But that also makes it possible for someone who wishes us malevolence to use it against us.
There were a few voices that seemed like they were crying from the wilderness when Google Maps first came around, and that were saying, wait a minute, we don't necessarily want pictures of everything, pictures of the entire United States, and installation, military installations, and as you said, infrastructure like power plants and so mm-hmm. forth. We don't necessarily want that up there, and yet you don't really have control over it, do you? I mean, you can't stop them if they pay for the satellite that's up there taking the pictures. You can't work around that part of it. So what do we do?
Well, I think a central tenet of any information operations planning process is to not try and stop data, but to accommodate for it in your planning process. Know what can be seen from space mm-hmm. and simply cover up those aspects that, you know, cover it with a tent, if you will,
uh-huh.
With the realization you're not going to be able to stop that kind. I think it's important to note that in traditional domains in the past, whether it's space, whether it's air, some of the first adopters were always the military. In this case, the military are the latecomers, and that this domain, the cyber domain, is dominated by commercial and private interests that may be, in fact, far ahead of militaries around the world in mastering that domain. I think that's a critical difference we're seeing now.
What has that meant for the adoption of some of these technologies and for the perception of some of them in the minds of the people in the military that are trying to get adjusted to the fact that they might have not miss this one, but just be behind rather than leading as in the past?
Well, this somewhat gets back to the point you raised earlier about the adaptation of social media or networked information for management and business purposes, which is one of the things that my college is deeply involved in teaching, is that the more that we can mirror or take advantage of the procedures and methodologies that the private sector and the business world have created and come to use for efficiency purposes, we gain advantages in some ways from doing that.
You're hearing the voice of Dr. Dan Keel, who's a professor of information operations at iCollege, part of the National Defense University, and also hearing from Bob Giesler, senior vice president of cyber and information operations at SAIC, both men involved with InfoWarCon, which is coming next week to the Washington Convention Center. You can learn more about it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. One more break, and back to wrap up our conversation in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I remember that morning, I woke up with simple flu-like symptoms. As the day progressed, my temperature reached 106 degrees, so my parents rushed me to the ER.
When Leslie Meigs was a child, she was diagnosed with meningococcal meningitis.
That's when they brought my parents in, and I told them the reality of the situation, that I was dying, and that I probably wouldn't make it.
Without a vaccination to prevent it, Leslie's type of meningitis, although rare, can lead to serious complications and death within 48 hours.
I was in a coma for weeks, in the hospital for months, and had to go on dialysis. All of this, and I'm considered lucky.
Novartis is developing new and innovative vaccines to help protect against meningitis, influenza, and other infectious diseases.
I believe that people don't need to suffer from diseases like this. And with all the new vaccines that are being developed today, hopefully, they won't have to.
Novartis. Think what's possible.
Whoever said that you must only talk about politics or your brand of religion to have a great life? Whoever said that you should only have one interest? Explore different people and different perspectives. That's right, get out of the box. I'm Coach Lynn. Listen, no spin, no shock. I'm bringing a little flavor.
Listen for the Lynn Johnson Motivational Radio Show Saturdays, 11 a.m. to 12 noon on 1500 and 820 a.m.
Make your dollar go further at Nationals Park. Get your rent on and watch future Hall of Famer Pudge Rodriguez, All-Star Ryan Zimmerman, slugger Adam Dunn, and the Nats battle the Braves Tuesday, May 4th through Thursday the 6th. T-shirt Tuesday. Be one of the first 10,000 fans. You'll get a free Natstown T-shirt presented by the Potomac Nationals. Miller Lite Party Night Thursday with $5 Miller products at the Miller Lite Scoreboard Walk. Spend less, get more, go Nats. Visit Nationals.com or call 888-632-NATS.
Your Army Computing Refresh calls for someone who knows the terrain. As a trusted supplier to the U.S. Army for over six decades, Hewlett-Packard is a name you can count on. HP offers a broad range of desktops, notebooks, and workstations at special ADMC2 prices. And they include efficiency features, like the all-new 2010 Intel Core i5 processor with Intel Turbo Boost technology. See the full range of solutions now at hp.com/HP for Army.
The American Council for Technology is celebrating 30 years of collaboration between government and industry. The upcoming Management of Change Conference features speakers, workshops, best practices, and networking opportunities, all focusing on the government's IT strategic agenda. Building on the success of the past 30 years of collaboration, this conference is a must-attend for government and industry IT leaders. Mark your calendar for May 23rd through the 25th at the Lowe's Philadelphia Hotel. For more information or to register, go to actgov.org/MOC2010. Register today.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We've been talking to you this hour about InfoWarCon happening next week at the Convention Center, and Bob Giesler of SAIC and Dan Keel of the National Defense University, both there. We've talked about some of the main discussion points, some of the things that jumped out at me, I guess, because this whole show is about me, of course. I'm just kidding. But some of the things that I thought were the most universally applicable, not for just for people who are involved in the defense world, but for people at across all the federal agencies. What is somebody, though, going to get? What's the whole package that someone will get when they come to InfoWarCon? What will they take away from it?
InfoWarCon is targeting a professional information operations planner or anybody who works with them in government. That includes public affairs as well. I think it's critical to understand that as information operations planners, we also try to say the bad things so that you understand what is media thinking about deception planners. What is Hezbollah thinking about U.S. media releases regarding Israel? So we are going to present the good, the bad, and quite frankly, a few edgy conversations designed to try and evoke conversation and debate within that professional community. So if you really don't want to understand the current issues, InfoWarCon's a good place to go.
It's kind of the theory that you can't really, a cut can't really heal till you get the scab off, clean it out, and let it heal.
One of the things we promise is that you won't see any Chamber of Commerce speeches. You'll get some pokey and provocative presentations. It brings together the military, the academic, the industrial community, and it is a networking opportunity par excellence.
And your students all get extra credit for attending, don't
they? That's
correct. Uh-huh. Dan Keel is a professor of information operations at iCollege at the National Defense University. Bob Giesler is the senior VP for cyber and information operations at SAIC and the former director of information operations and strategic studies in the Office of the Secretary of Defense. Gentlemen, thank you both for being on the program today. It's great to have you. This conversation will be posted later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and you can find it there. Listen back to it anytime you like. We'll also have information about InfoWarCon so you can learn more about it and sign up to be in the audience for some of these events next week. It's May 14, 12th, 13th, and 14th at the Washington Convention Center in downtown D.C. Also, we'll have more information about the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Subcommittee hearing that you heard parts of in the first hour of this program, and also information about the book by Dr. Paula Calajuri. So that you can learn more about the book and get yourself a copy if you'd like to, or listen to my conversation with Dr. Calajuri at your leisure. The Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabeck and Amy Morris is up next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And I am back tomorrow beginning at 1 with a brand new in-depth program on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thanks for listening.